We're starting here on the top of Chaf Ked Amud Aleph, seven lines down. We're in the middle of the story of the posing of Rabbi Gamliel as the Nasi, and the replacing of him by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And the Gemara ended off with the story about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He was 18 years old at the time that he took the office of the Nasi. The miracle happened that he got 18 streaks of white hair, because his wife felt that would be appropriate for him to be classified as a zakein, person of stature, to be Doresh Birabim. Now the Gemara continues, Tana, oto yom, so kul de shomer petach. That day they removed the guard from the doors of the Beit Midrash. Now the hem reshut, the Talmudim likanes. They gave permission to all that wanted to learn to come into the Beit Midrash. Ayar, gom leo machriz bo mer, kol tamid, jain to choke baro, lo yikanes the Beit Midrash. Any tamid who's inside is not like his outside, lo yikanes the Beit Midrash, he should not enter into the Beit Midrash. Meaning that he has to be a person who is through and through solid, midot, learning, straightforward person, person who their outside countenance reflects exactly what they are feeling on the inside. That's a rare occurrence, so they didn't have so many talmidim in the Beit Midrash. He says, "How yomo tosve kamasav sali." On that day, they had to add in a bunch of benches into the Beit Midrash. Amar Rabbi Yochanan pligi baba Yosef ben Dustai v'rabbonon. There's an argument of how many benches they added. Chanamari tosvu arba me'asav sali. One said they added 400 benches on that day. The other one says they added in 700 benches on that day. The famous vort here is they had new students that came in. But what it talked about was that they had to add in 400 benches or 700 benches. Because those that came beforehand, Tocham Baram, they weren't worried about the benches. Right? But those types of people, they came to learn, they were worried about the learning. But when he started adding in the people who were not so straightforward and not simply there for the learning, then they had to focus on how many benches they added in, not the number of talmidim that were added. Then the conditions became more important to the situation. But you see, the number of people that came in on that day was significant. So have a kachal shodati to Rabbi Gamliel. Gamliel was dismayed by this fact. Amar dilma chasu shalom menati Torah Yisrael. Maybe I withheld Torah from Yisrael, meaning that maybe I did the wrong thing by closing the doors to these people. Look how many more people came into the Beit Midrash on that day. Aksulei b'chalmei. In his dream, he sees chatzvei chivarei, white pitchers, the mayan kitma, that are full of ashes, black ashes. The idea being that Rabbi Gamliel believed that the talmid who came in had to be tochol kibaro. So here you have a white pitcher with black ashes on the inside, showing that tocham is not kibaram, indicating that Rabbi Gamliel wasn't wrong about this, that those that came in were not re'uyim to be in the Beit Midrash, velohi. And you don't take it seriously? Haidli tuvei date hu da'achzulei. The dream came to him in order to appease or to make Rabbi Gamliel feel better. But that doesn't mean what he had done was right. Tana, idiot bo yom nishnet. Masechet idiot was learnt on that day. And I mentioned that earlier in yesterday's daf, when it says about Rabbi Yehuda ben Boba, betana bebechirta gavadei, that we would see the story here. This is the story of Masechet idiot. V'chol eichad aminim bo yom. Anywhere in Shas where it says bo yom on that day, how yom have it means that day. The day when Rabbi Gamliel was deposed, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah took over, and they removed the guards in the Beit Midrash, and the place was flooded with Talmidim. There was no halacha that was left b'safeg, unresolved in the Beit Midrash, that they were not able to clarify it. So Rashi says, mitoch shirabu Talmidim, rav achidud v'apilpul. Because of the number of attendees, the sharpness, the insights, the ability to come to a halachic decision was enhanced because of the number of people that were there. Because of that, idiot is known as bibichirta, the chosen, the special, the unique masechta, because of its status of having all the talmidim there on that day. And therefore, anything that's written in there, we generally say halacha ke masechet idiot. V'af Rabbi Gamliel lo mana atzmo v'beit midrash filu sha'achat. Even Rabbi Gamliel was in the Beit Midrash on that day. The Tnan, we have the Mishnah in Ediot, Bo Bayom Ba Yehuda Gerim Amoni Lifnehem Bebeit Midrash. And that day, Yehuda, a convert that was from Amon, was in the Beit Midrash. Amalem Mani Labo Begal. What's my status in terms of joining Klal Yisrael? This week's Parsha, Parsha Kiteitze, Lo Yavo Amoni Omovi Begal Hashem. And Amoni and Moavi are not accepted as converts to the Kal Hashem. Gamliel says it's simple. The pasuk in this week's parsha can't join the cow. You can't convert. You can join the cow. You can join Klal Yisrael. Doesn't it say Lo Yavo Amoni Movi B'Kal Hashem? Explicit pasuk, Rabbi Yeshua. How could you say that? Do you really know who Amon and Moab is anymore? Are they residing in the land of Amon and Moab anymore? Kvar alasan cherev, melech Ashur. There's a series of Assyrian kings that basically attack the area of Eber Yardane, including Amon, Moab, Edom. All those areas were conquered by the Assyrian kings, and at first, Reuben, Gad, Nechasi, Shebim, and Asher, later, the whole northern kingdom of Bnei Israel was conquered by the Assyrian kings and exiled. They finally try to attack Yerushalayim. The attack of Sennacherib on Yerushalayim fails. But Melech Ashur, when he conquered these areas, what they did was a common practice in their day, but here it's mentioned explicitly in the Navi, they used to move the people. Once you had conquered an area, in order to prevent rebellions in the future, plus show who was in charge, they used to move the people who resided in this location to another location. He mixed up the different nations. And that's one of the offers that he makes when he comes to Yerushalayim, lays siege to Yerushalayim, says that I have wonderful places to take you to. If you just surrender and you give in, I'll exile you into these beautiful locations. Gemara Shenemar says, "Basir gvulot amim." I remove the boundaries of nations. Ba'atudotehem. It's spelled wrong here. The Shas says it says here atidotehem, but it's ba'atudotehem. Shosati. And also here, this is spelled differently. In the Navi, it's a shin and a sin. Shosati. Barid ka'abir yoshvim. So I remove the boundaries of nations and I robbed them of all their goods and their possessions. And I took down their great ones or their places of residence. We know that he moved everybody around. So once he's moved everybody around, if I look at the population of the world, Amon and Moab are a minority of the population of the world. So any one individual that comes out of that population, I say, is from the rove, from the majority. The majority are mutarim lavo bakal. That's what the Gemara says here. To hold the parish, miruba parish, a principle of rove, which is that when a grouping of individuals, a grouping of anything, we take one out of that group, we assume whichever one you took out came from the majority of what was there. So to over here, any individual that is part of the population of the world, Amon and Moab are a minority, and they're all mixed together now. If someone comes forth, we're going to assume they're not from Amon and Moab. Eventually, I will return Bnei Amon to its location. And so they're back in place. If they're back in place, then that is Amon and Moab. Doesn't also say that I also return Bnei Israel to their land. Well, dain lo shavu, and they didn't come back. So how can you be so certain that Amon and Moab are back in place if Bnei Israel haven't come back in place? Who says that that nevuah was already nitkayim? Miad hitiru alavo b'kal. Right away, they allowed him to join the kahal, meaning they paskin like Rabbi Yoshua. Amar Gmeel ho v'hochi ava, izel v'faisi the Rabbi Yoshua. Since this happened, let me go and appease, apologize to Rabbi Yoshua. Interesting, what does it mean, hochi ava, because this happened? So you can read it one of two ways. Hochi ava means that the people accepted Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the Nasi, and they were okay with Rabbi Gamliel being deposed. The will of the people was carried out, and so Rabbi Gamliel sees that the people are serious about this, and that's what they believe. The way Rashi reads it, is Hochi Ava is that the halacha went like Rabbi Yoshua. That in a machlok between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, the people sided with Rabbi Yoshua. So he saw that the people had favored Rabbi Yoshua, the position Rabbi Yoshua, and that maybe he was wrong in attacking him so fiercely. So Kimato de Beite, when he reached the house of Rabbi Yeshua, Chazino de Ashito de Beite de Meshachlan, so that the walls of his house were black. So from the walls of your house, it's clear to me that you are a pachmi, somebody who works with coals. It could either be that he worked with coals or he was a blacksmith, one of the two. But because of that, the walls of his house were black from that work with the coals. Woe is the generation that you are its leader. That's what Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Gamliel. Woe is the generation that you are its leader. Because you don't know the true conditions and difficulties of the Talmidei Chachamim. This is the first time that he's come upon Rabbi Yeshua and realizing that he was mitparnes from a lowly profession and that his life was very difficult. That you don't know that. How they make a living and how they sustain themselves. Rabbi Gamliel, remember, is a nasi, and so he's supported either by the taxation on the people or by the government. He was possibly a paid official of the government. Therefore, he didn't have to worry about this. But this person like Rabbi Yeshua had to struggle to make ends meet.
But he's saying you don't know.
Right. There are two possibilities of what it meant.
He was.
Right. There are two ways to read it. You could either read it that he was wrong, and he didn't realize that the walls were black because of poverty, and not because he was a blacksmith or a worker with coal. Or, the way I explained it, which was that he was a blacksmith, and he was working with it, but this is the first time that Rabbi Gamliel knew how Rabbi Yeshua made a living. And then until now, he didn't realize how difficult Rabbi Yeshua's life was, how difficult it was for him to make a parnasa. Amar lo, naneti lecha. He says, I insulted you. It was a little too much. I went overboard in terms of my approach to you, making you stand up. Macholi, please forgive me. Lo eshkach be. He did not listen. He was not willing to grant him forgiveness. Aseh bishvil kvod abba. Do it from the honor of my father. Payes. He accepted it, and he was mochel him. Amru man nezel v'leim adhu l'rabbonon. Who will go and tell the rabbonon that they've now made up and things have been settled between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua? Amru ha'u koves ana azilna. This launderer said that I'll go tell them what's transpired. Shalach lo Rabbi Yeshua l'beit midrasho. So he sends a message with the koves. Manda lavish mada yobash mada. Manda lo lavish mada. So the one who wears Madah's clothing, the Madim, our uniform today, the one who is adorned in the clothing of royalty, of rulership, he should wear it. The one who is not clothed in royalty, the man should he be saying to the one who normally wears the cloak of leadership, Shalech Manech, send me your cloak or send me your uniform, but I'll be sure and I'll wear it. Meaning, Rabbi Gamliel is part of the Shoshelet of the Nisim from David HaMelech, his father, his grandfather, they were all Nisim. And so he is from a family of Nisim, a family of royalty. So he is the Mada, the one who has the uniform, and the one who normally wears that. So he's the proper one to fit into the cloak and to wear the mantle of leadership. Well, Elazar ben Azariah, he's new to the job. He doesn't have that yichus necessarily. He doesn't necessarily have a history of being a nasi. Should he be saying to Rabbi Gamliel, send me over your cloak, send me over the mantle of leadership? That doesn't sound right. So that was the message that Rabbi Yeshua sent to the Beit Midrash with this koves. Amar the hu Rabbi Kiva the Rabbanon. Rabbi Kiva said to the Rabbanon, Troku gale, lock the gates, close the doors, so that the servants of Rabbi Gamliel, remember he was the Nasi, so he had an entourage of people that helped him out, and we know from other stories that sometimes the servants of the Nasi's house were very powerful, even of themselves, and they used to take advantage of the people sometimes. So over here they're afraid that Rabbi Gamliel's servants are going to come, cause problems and make difficulties to the Rabbanan, force them to take Rabbi Gamliel back. So Rabbi Kiva says, lock the doors so they can't come in. So I'm Rabbi Yeshua, mutav de'ikum ve'ezel ano de gabayosum. Alright, I better go and say something, because nobody else is going to get in. They didn't trust the koveis, they're not going to listen to anybody else. So ato taraf ha'babi, he comes and knocks on the door, amalei, and he said to them, mazeh ben mazeh yazeh, v'she'en olo mazeh, v'lo ben mazeh yomar la mazeh, ben mazeh me'mecha me'me'arab, e'farcha e'fer makleh. So again, a similar type of mashal, which is mazeh ben mazeh, one who sprinkles. When it comes to the parah aduma, who sprinkles the waters of the parah aduma is a kohen. So mazeh ben mazeh, kohen ben kohen. Someone who is in a shoshelet of yuchus. So since he is the mazeh ben mazeh, yazeh, he should be the one who does the sprinkling. V'sheinu lo mazeh, the one who is not a sprinkler. V'lo ben mazeh, not a son of a sprinkler, referring to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Yomar lemazeh ben mazeh, he should say to the one who is the sprinkler, the son of a sprinkler, Meimecha, your waters of Meimara are not really Maim Chaim, waters from a live spring, but rather from still waters, cave waters. Ve'efercha, and your ashes are not the ashes of Paraduma, but Efer Makleh, burnt up stick or wood. So it's not appropriate for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to be taking the mantle of leadership away from Rabbi Gamliel. I just think Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is just he's a Talmud Chacham. He's Siri Ezra, but he wasn't someone who was in the fabric of royalty or leadership. And all of a sudden they put him into leadership, so he should be the one taking away the mantle. I think it's a mashal, and he's a nice way for him to say basically that things should go back to the way they were. So Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, nitpayasta. says, were you appeased? You forgave him? Everything's okay now? You made up? The only reason we deposed Rabbi Gamliel is because of your kavod. So tomorrow morning, you and I, meaning Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Kiva, we're going to go back to Rabbi Gamliel. Before they did that, they thought, what are we going to do now? Navre, we're going to remove Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Gmiri, we know, Malim Mikodesh Ve'moridim. You go up, you don't come back down. If you go up in holiness, not return, then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah can't go back to being a regular Talmud in the yeshiva. He's now the Rosh Yeshiva, he's the Nasi, so it can't be that he returns to his old status. Nidrash Mar Chadash Abdo V'Mar Chadash Abdo. If we make them equals, peers, each one of them gets one Shabbat, Ata Dignuye. There'll be a certain amount of jealousy between them because of the equality. If they're considered peers, there's no clear deference to one of them as being the leader. If you have them being of equal standing, what ends up happening is they become two Batim Midrash, they're two Nasiim. So you have to make it clear that one of them is the leader. So Ela Lidrosh Rabbi Gamliel, the way we have in the Girsa of Argumar is Tlat Toshabte, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Chad Toshabto. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah will darshan once a month out of the 4 weeks, and Rabbi Gamliel will do three out of them. On the side, you can see that the Girsa that's probably more proper is two times for Rabbi Gamliel, one time for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So it's clear that Rabbi Gamliel is the real Nasi, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah will be subject to the rulings of Rabbi Gamliel, but the reason that we don't depose him is because he was now a Nasi, we're not going to get rid of him being the Nasi. So they granted him one out of every 3 weeks in order to give the drasha. V'hainu damar mar, Shabbat shemi haita, that's the Gemara in Chagiga says, there's a story about whose Shabbat was it on that week? Shabbat ben Azariah. It was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's Shabbat, because it wasn't clear whose Shabbat was. I mean, that sometimes it was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, sometimes it was Rabbi Gamliel. Voto Talmid, the Gemara just concludes, the Talmid, who was the one who precipitated the whole problem and asked the question of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, was Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. He was the one who posed the question to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua about whether Tefillat Arvit is Rishut, and he was the one who brought the answer of Rabbi Yeshua before Rabbi Gamliel. It's not clear that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai acted in the best way here. First of all, it obviously caused a huge rift between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua and all the difficulty. And number two, as we discussed yesterday, in terms of shopping a psak, if you get a psak from someone, you only have to go to the other person if you inform them of the psak. It seems from the Ramah that it's kvar amar, that he told him. It seems they have to tell him beforehand. Although it's not perfectly clear, it could be they tell him afterwards. So he might not have also acted so properly in not telling up front Rabbi Gamliel, I already asked Rabbi Yeshua that it's Rishut before Rabbi Gamliel gave it the psak, and that he should have informed him that.
Would that have helped him escape?
I don't know if it would have helped him. That is the proper etiquette in these situations when you're asking to Talmidei Chachamim for an answer. Alright, V'sham Musafim Kol Hayom. Musaf is all day. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'nikra Posheya. Someone who is Me'acher, the Musaf that he has to daven it late in the day, he's a Posheya. You have to do it, you should do it earlier in the day. Tan Rabbanan. He has an option in front of him of davening musaf or mincha. He first davens mincha, and then afterwards musaf. Mincha is more frequent. It's consistently there. Musaf is less frequent, less consistent. And therefore, mincha takes precedence. Yehuda says you daven musaf first, and then afterwards you daven mincha. Because Musaf, the time's going to run out. Remember, Rabbi Yehuda's position is that Musaf only goes until the seventh hour, whereas Mincha goes the remainder of the day till Shkia. Better to do Musaf, whose time is going to pass, elapse, and then he won't be able to daven Musaf anymore, than to daven Mincha first, which you have a lot more time to deal with. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha mitpadal shu Mincha, v'achar kach mitpadal shu Musaf. Daven Mincha first, and then you daven Musaf afterwards. I'm assuming that Rabbi Yochanan is saying the
Halacha. Even like Rabbi Yehuda,
because we pass from the Shachrit like Rabbi Yehuda, and Mincha we said you have an option between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Here Rabbi Yochanan is making it clear that we do not passkin like Rabbi Yehuda, we passkin like the Chachamim, and therefore you're going to daven Mincha first and then Musaf afterwards.
Also,
now Tosafot points out, this is what we mentioned before when we discussed this in the Mishnah, that this is a huge issue on the Yomim Noraim, which is that many times Shachrit goes very late and Musaf goes late. And then you end up in a period of time where you're starting Musaf when it's already Zman HaMincha. And that's what it says. If that's the case, you have to daven Mincha first. Can't daven Musaf first, you have to daven Mincha first. And that's why in most places, I'm assuming Rabbi David does the same thing here, they make sure that they get to Musaf before Zman HaMincha, that they start Musaf before Zman HaMincha so they don't run into this problem. On the other hand, the Re in Tosafot says something interesting. He says, doesn't matter, you still daven Musaf first and then Mincha afterwards because there's plenty of time left in the day. It's not a question that you're going to miss Mincha over here. And that brings a fundamental question as to what is Kdimut here. The Gemara says, Tadir goes before Sheino Tadir. When do we apply that? So it seems from the two Deot and Tosfot that there's a difference in opinion of how we apply this. Is this an application of hierarchy, which means irrespective of whether there's enough time for both mitzvot or not, this tells you one mitzvah qualitatively is better than the other because it's Tadir. And therefore you're going to daven Mincha before Musaf because of that, even though you have plenty of time left in the day to daven both of them. The Re, on the other hand, says the question of Tadir only comes up when you're in competition and you have to make a choice.
Only one of them.
So that's a question of Hachra. The Re is saying when I have to make a decision, then Tadir matters. But when I don't have to make a decision, I have the possibility of accomplishing both of them, then Tadir is no longer relevant. And I don't have to give that hierarchy of Mincha going before Musaf. But it's the fundamental question of what it means when we say something as more common, more frequent. What does that mean? Is that solely a way to decide when I have a competition between them? Or is that telling me information that I have a hierarchy, which means I will always choose the one that is Tadir over Sheino Tadir, even when I have time to do both of them? When he got weak, he was sick, and he could no longer chazer over his learning, he's go said at the doorway to the Beit Midrash of Rav Natan Bar Tuvi, Amar ki chalfei rabbanan az eku mikamayu v'akabel agra. At least when the rabbanan pass by, I'll stand up to give them kavod, and I'll get schar for that, because I don't have the ability to learn right now. Nafok ata Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvi. So guess who comes out? The Rosh Hashiva himself, Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvi comes out. Mei man amar alocha Beit Midrasha. It says, what was said over in the Beit Midrash today? Le'ach amar Rabbi Yochanan, ein alocha k'Rabbi Yehuda. The law is not like Rabbi Yehuda over here. The mar mitzvah adam shel musaf, me'achar kach mitzvah shel mincha. So amalei Rabbi Yochanan amra. He says that was said over the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Amalein says yes, it is. Tanamine arbein zimnin. He learned it over from him 40 times. He reviewed it with him 40 times. Amalei chadai lacha or chadadi lacha. Is this a unique memra? You don't have any other memra from Rabbi Yochanan. That's why you're so excited. And that's why you reviewed it 40 times. Or chadadi lacha. Is it new to you? Is it new halacha that you haven't heard before? Amalei chadadi li. It's new to me. Mishum desveikali b'Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Because I thought that the author of this position was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who said that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, but rather like the Chachamim. I thought the author of that position was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Now you corrected me, and that it's Rabbi Yochanan who is the author of that position. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Kol mitpalel tefillah shel musafim nachar shev shaot Rabbi Yehuda alav katuv omer. Anybody who davens musaf after the seventh hour, according to Rabbi Yehuda, which is the end of the zman musaf, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the pasuk says about him, nogei mi mimoed asafti mi mechayu. So those that, we'll see what the word nogei means, mi moed, moed meaning a holiday over here, asafti mi mechayu, took them away, I grabbed them away from you, my mashmo, the high nogei lishna the tavrahu. How do you know that nogei means an lashon of smashing, crushing? Because the mitargim Rabbi Yosef, as we know, was sick in the middle of his life. He lost his sight, and therefore he became a baki in Targum, because he wasn't allowed to learn Torah Shebichtav, because he couldn't see it. Therefore he knows the Targum. So the Targum Rabbi Yosef says the Targum is, Tavra ati asaneon de Beit Yisrael, a crushing blow should come on the enemies of Klal Yisrael. That's a Lashon Saginor, a euphemism for Bnei Yisrael themselves. Al de'achuz mane modaya b'Yerushalayim. Because they delayed the times for davening in Yerushalayim. Tosafot points out, I can't be talking about the Moed itself, because there's no Ichur for Moed, because there's no Teshlumim. There's nothing to make up over here. So it must be talking about a Tfilah, where you can push it off when you push it back on the day. And that's how he knows that the word Moed here means Tfilah, or the prayers of the holidays. Anybody davens shachrit after 4 hours, Rabbi Yehuda, lava katuv omer, nogei mi moed, asafti mimcha yu. My mashmud, I nogei lishna de tzaruhu. How do you know that nogei means pain, affliction? Dichtiv, dalfa nafshi mituga. My soul drips from the suffering affliction. It's young women, virgins were afflicted, and it's bitter for it. You see the word nogah is used as tsar, or affliction. Before we saw it means crushing, the crushing blow, but they're both using or giving the same idea, which is that this delay in the proper timing of tefillah ends up with a punishment or something very negative. Rav Avya chalosh v'lo'ati l'pirko. Rav Avya became ill or was weak and he wasn't able to come to the drasha, the Rav Yosef. The next day he showed up. Bai wanted to calm down Rav Yosef that Rav Avya hadn't showed up the previous day. My time alata ma lepirka. So he asked him in front of Rav Yosef, you know, why didn't you come yesterday? He says, I was very weak. I wasn't feeling well, and therefore I couldn't make it. So Rav Yosef says, then why don't you eat something, taste something, and then you'd feel better? You don't hold like the member of Rav Huna. Dam Rav Huna asur lo adam shitom klum kodem shitpelo tefilat musafim. It's asur to taste anything before you daven musaf. Daven musaf biyachid. V'litom midei, eat something v'lameite and then show up. You don't hold of the member of Rav Yochanan. Asur lo adam shiakdim tefilato letefilat tzibur. You're not allowed to daven before the tefillah of the tzibur. You must daven musaf after the tzibur is daven musaf, or along with the tzibur when they daven musaf. Don't we have a qualification in that statement? That's only when he's there, he's present with the tzibur, he shouldn't go earlier than them. But if he's not with the tzibur, he's at home, then there's no restriction like that. The halacha is not like Rav Huna that you're a sur to be to'aim before musaf. It's not true. The only restriction you have before musaf is to eat a suda. Can't have a full suda, because if you get caught up in the suda, you get tired, then you won't daven musaf. But to simply be to'aim, to taste something, that's not a problem before the musafim. And also, v'lok Rabbi Shua ben Levi. And Allah is also not like Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rav Huna had Amran. Rav Huna, we already know the member from. Rabbi Shua ben Levi is the next line in the Gemara. Then Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Kein shehi azman tefilat ha-mincha, asur lo adam shitom klum. Kodem shitpelel tefilat ha-mincha. When the zman ha-mincha comes, one may not taste a morsel before they daven mincha. And again, the loch is not like him, but rather, the loch is that you can't have a su'uda. You can't have something significant before mincha. But to have a small snack or something small to eat, that's not a problem before tefilat ha-mincha. Okay, next Mishnah. Rabbi Chunya ben Akana yitvelel b'knisdato l'beit ha-midrash. Rabbi Akana used to daven when he came into beit ha-midrash. And when he exited, a small tefillah. They asked him, what's the source for this? Where did you come from this? And the way in, I davened that nothing bad should happen from me. I mean, I should not cause any problems or misguiding through my teachings. And my way out, I thank Hashem for my portion. What does he say on his way in? Should be your will, Hashem, that no bad thing, mistake, should happen because of me. And I should not trip up or make a mistake with regards to psak halacha. The way that the Gra reads the girsa, then he skips down to that I should not, al-tamei, lo amar al-tamei, tahor, velo al-tahor tamei, I shouldn't say, give the wrong psak halacha with tuma and tara. Then it continues, lo akashel b'dvar halacha, I should not trip up in a dvar halacha, v'yismichu b'chaveirai, and my friends should be happy with me. I should be pleasing in their eyes. Velo akashlu chaveirai b'dvar halacha, my friends should not trip up in halacha, v'ismach b'hem, and I should be happy with them. And as Rashi points out over here, velo akashel, I should not trip up, v'yismichu chaveirai al-kishloni, and they will celebrate my tripping up by mistake. Harei ra'ot shtayim. That's two bad things. She'agrom la'em she'ayin shu. So number one is I'm going to cause there to be a mistake. And number two is I'm going to be a cause for them to be punished. Because why? They're celebrating when I make a mistake. And Hashem doesn't like that when you celebrate on the downfall or the shortcomings of another individual. And therefore they're going to be punished because of me. And the Sichlut Musar mentions that Navota Karmeli, when it came to Achav and Izevel, Achav says he wants the vineyard of Navot HaKarmeli, and Navot says he won't give it up. Izevel has him killed. The Gemara relates that in Perek HaChelek, that Navot HaKarmeli, even though he's in Olam Haba, he's in a separate mechitza. He's not allowed to be in the mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Question is why? Because Izevel and Achav are going to be punished because of him. Even though he did nothing. But because he was the cause of their punishment, therefore, he can't be in the mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you see a similar idea over here, that Rashi says that I shouldn't cause others to be punished. If I trip up and they celebrate my tripping up or making a mistake, They'll be punished, but their punishment will come because of me. And I'm responsible for that. So I don't want them to be punished for me, and that's why I'm saying that I should make no mistake, and that my friends should be happy with me, so that we don't have these negatives. What does he say on the way out? This is familiar to us, because this is the closing of the Masechta. You made my portion from those that sit in the Beit Midrash. From those that sit on the corners, that are idle, talking, and schmoozing, wasting their time. I get up early, and they get up early. I get up to learn Torah. They get up to waste their time, to chit-chat. I work hard, and they work hard. I work hard, and I get the schar because I'm learning Torah. They work hard, and they don't have the schar of Torah. I run, and they run. I run, too. And they're running down to Geinom because they have all this free time on their hands, they're chit-chatting, they're going to end up in Averot and doing the wrong things. There's another Girsa that's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Tamidim came in to visit him. Teach us the ways of life so that we'll know how to get to Olam Haba. Amalem, he gives them a number of items. One, he's Aru b'chod chayrichem. Be careful about the honor of your friends. This is the opposite of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. We're no Eloi Noei Kavod Zelazet. So he says, be careful about the Kavod of your friends. Umin u'b'nechem ne'egayon. Keep your children away from Egayon. Logic, which Rashi says two possibilities. Either don't have them learn too much Chumash. Make sure that they learn Mishnah and Gemara as well. Or, Mishsichat Yiladim. Don't let them fool around and play all the time. Voshivum ben Birkei Talmid HaChamim. You should sit the children in the knees, or between the knees of the Talmid HaChamim, meaning in front of the Talmid HaChamim. Shatem mitvalim, de'ul lifnei me'atem omdim. And when you daven, make sure you are aware of who you're standing for, that you are standing for God. Shvilkach tisku l'chayelam haba. If you keep all of these, you will be zocheh l'chayelam haba. Shkhar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, a similar story, nechnesu tamidav l'bakro. Tamidim came in to visit him. Came in shura'ahu tamid chil levkot. When he saw them, he began to cry. Amar lo, tamidav. His student said to him, Ner Yisrael, amuda yimini. The candle of Israel, the right pillar. Patisha Chazak, the strong hammer. Why are you crying? They were taking me to a king of flesh and blood. He's here today, immortal. He's a mortal being. If he gets angry at me, it's not permanent anger because he's going to die. And if he imprisons me, and his imprisonment is not forever. If he kills me, I'm not dead forever because I still have and when I come before a king, I could actually try to appeal to him, appease him, or bribe him. If I had to come for a judgment before him, I'd be crying, I'd be scared. Now they're taking before me the ultimate king, for God. He's immortal. He's forever. Shim kweis, alai, kaso, kaso, lam. If he gets angry at me, that's a permanent anger. If he imprisons me, that's a permanent imprisonment. If he kills me, then that's a permanent death. I can't try to appease him or appeal to him. I can't bribe him. In front of me, I have two ways. One leads me to the right place, one leads me to the wrong place. I don't know which path they're going to take me on now. I shouldn't cry. So he's scared. He's scared of what's going to happen, and therefore he's crying. Amar lo Rabbeinu Barchenu. So he says to our Rebbe, please bless us. Your fear of God should be like your fear of humans. That's it? Just fear of humans? It should only be so. You should know. When a person violates, does a sin, what does he say? I hope nobody sees me. Even though, when he's in the room, God's looking right at him. He's seeing him right there. The fact is, he doesn't focus on that. In Perek Merubah, in Baba Kama, the Gemara there discusses the difference between a gazlan and a ganav. Why does a ganav pay kefil, double damages, and a gazlan just have to repay the object? So over there, a memra in the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, a ganav, according to one of the definitions there, is someone who steals at night. Why is he steal at night? Because he's afraid of the human being seeing him or catching him. So he steals at night. He's afraid of humans, he's not afraid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore he's punished with kefil. The gazlan comes in the middle of the day and takes whatever he wants. A gazlan is not afraid of man, he's not afraid of God. At least he's consistent. But he doesn't put man above God. And the same thing here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says the same thing here. You should just at least have God on the same plane as man, at least have that same respect for God as you have for man, or the same fear you have of man should apply to God. And that's the member of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai here.
My brother-in-law always notes that this is the difference between the chush ha-seichel and the chush ha-alev. The difference between intellectual comprehension and emotional comprehension. A person can know something, have intellectual comprehension of it, and yet it will not impact their behavior. On the other hand, someone who feels something emotionally, they know it's present and it's right in front of them, then they will give more value or assign more consideration to that feeling, even though they might know something is different. And that's exactly what's happening in our case over here. The individual knows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching him. He knows that God is greater than man, but that's not in front of him. That's something that's left in the intellectual realm. And therefore he doesn't react to that. He steals, or he acts in a manner without regard for God. On the other hand, something that he knows in his heart, emotionally feels, something that if he's found by someone, he'll have immediate results, immediate impact. Over there, he feels that acutely. And therefore he's afraid to steal and be caught by man, or he's afraid to sin and be seen by man. And that creates this inconsistency within the individual. That something that he knows is true, that God is greater than man, still results in a behavior where he puts man above God. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. Halavai, that you should have the same fear as heaven as you have as fear of man. Man, which is the chush alev, is the emotional feeling, something that is acute and ever-present. That should be the same feeling you have with the intellectual understanding of God being in front of you all the time. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan says that halavai, that your fear of heaven should be like your fear of man.
When he was about to pass away, he said to them, "Tnu kelim ipnei atuma, move all utensils from the house so they would not become tamei tumat meit." Bechinu kisei lechizkiyahu melech Yehuda sheba. And Chizkiyahu the melech is coming to be melaveh me, to accompany me. Prepare a chair for him because he'll be here any minute. Right now the Mishnah continues with the dinim of Shmoneh Esrei. Gamliel Omer, b'chol yom v'yom mitpalah adam Shmoneh Esrei. Every day a person davens 18 brachot. Shomer me'ein yudchet. He davens a summary Shmoneh Esrei each day. Rekiv Omer, im shkura tefilato b'fiv mitpalah yudchet. If he knows the tefillah well, and it's easy for him to say, then he should daven the full Shmoneh Esrei. Im lav, it's difficult, me'ein Shmoneh Esrei. Then he should only daven a summary, concentrated version of the Shmoneh Esrei. If you make your tefillah into something that is fixed, it's a burden that you're trying to discharge, an obligation that you're trying to discharge, then your tefillah is not tachnunim, it's not considered to be a supplication before Hashem, and it's not really an acceptable tefillah. Bishua Mer Olech B'makom Sakana, person who's in a dangerous location, mitpalel tefillah ktsara, should daven a very short tefillah, v'omer, and this is what he says, Hoshea Hashem et Amecha, Hashem you should save your nation, et Sherit Yisrael, the remainder of Klal Yisrael, Chol Pashat Ha'ibur, Yud Tzarchichem Lefanecha. Gemara will discuss what it means, B'chol Pashat Ha'ibur, wherever they're found, their need should be in front of you. Baruch Atah Hashem, Shomeya Tefillah. So Ayer Rocheva Chamor, he's riding on a donkey, Yered V'yitpalel, you should get down and daven. If he's unable to get off the donkey because nobody watched the donkey while he davens, Gzir Panav, turn his face towards Yerushalayim. If he can't turn his face in that direction, should have in mind in his heart that he's facing towards the Kodshei Kodashim.
Right.
That's what they're discussing here. It depends on your ability to stop. On a highway, it's illegal to pull over on the shoulder unless you're in trouble. So to pull over the shoulder and daven would be problematic. It would be a sakana. So therefore you're allowed to stay in the car and continue to daven while you're traveling. That's what it said here. Which is that if you're on the chamor, if you dismount and daven, of course that's a better way to do it, because then you can face the right direction. You can have a proper kind of better concentration. But if you can't do that, you should at least try to turn your head in that direction. If you can't do that, at least have in mind that you're facing towards Yerushalayim. That's another issue about the distractions that are like when we said before.
Yeah,
that if you're holding something, it distracts you. Most likely not, because you're focused on the driving. But if you're a passenger in the car, passenger sitting next to the driver, they're not involved in the driving. It's dangerous for them to stop and to get out. They're going to dive in there. Ayam alech b'sfina o ba'asdo. He's going on a boat or a raft. Rashi says he's in prison. There you can't turn to the right direction, so you just have in mind that you should be facing towards Yerushalayim. It takes for granted here that there's a Shmoneh Esrei here. Where did this Mor Nesher come from? So Rabbi Hillel b'Rei Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani k'neged Yudchet Haskerot Shomer David. It's k'neged the 18 times Hashem's name is mentioned in Tehillim, his mother David. B'havul Hashem b'nei Elim. And as Rashi points out, the Gemara Darshins, Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that b'nei Elim refer to the Avot. They Darshin out of there that you have Avot, Gvurot, Piyat HaMeitim, Kedushat Hashem. And each of these are mentioned there, and that's the order of the Shmona Esrei, and there's 18 of them. V'yosef amar k'neged yudchet haskerot shebekriyat Shema. The 18 times Hashem's name is mentioned in the parshiot of Kriyat Shema. Rabbi Damchon, Rabbi Yishev Levi, k'neged Shmona Esrei chuliot shebeshidra. K'neged the 18 vertebrae that are found in the spine. Rabbi Damchon, Rabbi Yishev Levi, another member from him, about the spine. Amitvadot tzarech shichra. Person who davens has to bow down. Till the vertebrae in his back are popping out, are protruding. It's he has to bow down far enough so that he can see a coin and isar k'neged libo. Some suggest that means that on the floor, he can see a coin that's on the floor, he's looking right at it now. Others, like Rashi, suggest that when a person bends over, the rolls of fat from above and below capture a piece of skin in between, and that's what it means, k'neged libo. Kanina amar, k'imin sh'na'anea rosho shuv eno tzarich. You just move your head to indicate that you want to bow. Even though you can't do more, that's enough. Classic on an airplane. A person sitting and davening on an airplane, you can't get up to daven. You need to bow down. We don't ask you to get up and bow down. We just say that you should lean forward and move your head up so it indicates you want to bow. Just for whatever reason now, you're precluded from doing that. But you should show or demonstrate at least that you're trying to bend down, that you want to bend down. That's as long as he's showing the difficulty or the pain in him getting up, and it looks like he's bowing down. Why are you saying that there are 18 brachot? There are really 19 brachot. We have 19 brachot in our Shmoneh Esrei, not 18. That in Yavne they were metakein the Birkat Tzukim, which is Lamal Shinim. That was added on later on. So now, k'neged mi tiknua. So then, k'neged what did they do that? Right, that's true in general. The word stuki, whenever you see the word stuki in the Gemara, you have to question whether that's really the word, because the censors took out other words like minim and other things that were offensive to them, and they always put in the word stuki. So whenever you say it's stuki, it's not clear whether it's really it's stuki. Amar Rabbi Levi, the Rabbi Hillel, Brei, the Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, k'neged kel hakavod hirim. So even though it's not one of the regular names of Hashem, nevertheless that Kel gets you an extra Shem Hashem to get you 19. Rabbi Yosef, k'neged echad shebekriyat Shema. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem echad. That one is referring to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's how you get the 19th bracha, even though there are only 18 times the name of Hashem is mentioned. And the Rabbi Tanchum, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, k'neged chuliya ktana shebesidra. K'neged the small, soft vertebrae that's in the spine. You have the 18 big, solid vertebrae, and then there's a smaller one at the end. So can I get that? You get the 19 that you need. Okay, we'll stop over here. Strength.